I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we take a look at obstetric fistula, one of the most serious and tragic childbirth injuries. An obstetric fistula is a hole between the birth canal and bladder and or rectum. It is caused by prolonged obstructed labor without access to timely, high-quality medical treatment. Each year, between 50,000 to 100,000 women worldwide are affected by obstetric fistula, according to the World Health Organization. Many women in parts of Africa experience fistula and often suffer in silence. For more on the subject, I spoke with Dr. Serigne Magay-Gay, professor of urology at University Cheikh Anta Diop in Dakar, Senegal, and chair of urology at the Hospital General de Grand Yaouf.
Actually, obstetric fistula is a communication between the urinary system and the female genital tract, and occurring, unfortunately, during childbirth. When there's an obstruction during childbirth and there's no assistance, no cesarean section available, it can end up with a fistula and the urine flowing through the vagina. This is mainly called obstetric fistula.
What are some of the causes that lead women to have an obstetric fistula?
The main cause is obstruction and of the blockage of the progress of the fetus on childbirth. And this could be prevented during the prenatal follow-up when the midwife or the doctor realized that the woman cannot deliver normally. She should be referred to a center to have C-section. If not, unfortunately, when the fetus is the baby is not able to come out, there will be a compression of the bladder on the previous bone, and this will end up with a fistula. You can have other causes of fistula that could be iatrogenic, meaning instrumental, doing any procedure, endoscopic, surgical, in the pelvic area, meaning gynecological, urological, or general surgery, and a very rare cases, but unfortunately prevalent in some places in the world, like in the South African region, what we call the traumatic fistula, due to violence to women because of all those uprising or maybe some rebellions, we can have them. But obstetric fistula is mainly what happened in sub-Saharan Africa.
One of the things that we read about this condition is the fact that age can be a factor. Also, sometimes culture can contribute.
That's true, because when this is mainly due to early marriage, child marriages, or when the girl becomes pregnant very early, when she's not enough mature, and the pelvis not very large enough to allow the passage of the baby, this can happen. That's why by ending child marriage, we can maybe reduce the prevalence of obstetric fistula. When you talk about culture, it might be considered in two parts. One is, unfortunately, in some places, they don't think that women should deliver at the hospital or the maternity services, and the woman should deliver home, and this is very bad, and not assisted by a qualified personnel. The other factor is the relation between obstetric fistula and female genital mutilation. In some areas where female genital mutilation is very prevalent, is where we have obstetric fistula very prevalent too, meaning that maybe the two are related to the same cultural behaviors. So if we reduce child marriage, if we end the female genital cutting, we might be able to reduce the number of obstetric fistula.
The good news is obstetric fistula can be treated. And actually, that's one of the reasons you are in Cote d'Ivoire, taking part in a campaign to treat women who have developed this condition. Talk to us about this campaign in Cote d'Ivoire. What is it and why is it important?
Yeah, this campaign in Cote d'Ivoire is very important because we have started an initiative recently, like last August, when we brought in Cote d'Ivoire 14 surgeons from 12 sub-Saharan African countries to operate on 180 patients, 180 women with very complex fistula cases in Firebird Hospital, and I was coordinating that initiative. And that initiative end up with a high-level dialogue with the First Lady of Côte d'Ivoire, Mrs. Dominique Ouattara. And from there, we decided to have an annual work plan that will build capacity throughout the country and to allow surgeons in any single hospital to be able to take care routinely of the patient having suffering from obstetric fistula. Bodo was the first part of this initiative for this year. We'll be in Bodo now and we'll become in March. We have another one in May and maybe one in November. And today we have about 10 surgeons coming from this hospital in Bodo and other hospitals in different various regions of the country. And now we are developing capacity for them to be able to take care of the patient and not to wait until an expert comes or to wait in camps to be treated. So this is the first stage. And next one in March will be another initiative when we'll be bringing only women fistula surgeons, female fistula surgeons to come in the country and to do the same work. So at the end of this year, the objective is to have at any center where we can do fistula surgery, having someone at least competent to do it. That is what you want to do in Côte d'Ivoire, and from Côte d'Ivoire, we're going to scale up to other countries.
So what does a fistula treatment consist of? I know surgery is part of it. Can you take us through what it is?
Actually, when the fistula is constituted, the only treatment is surgery. Or surgery in obstetric fistula is very exciting, actually, but can be very challenging sometimes. That's why we have classified fistula in simple, in less simple, meaning complex and complicated. And what we are aiming at this workshop is to train the doctors to be able to take care of at least simple cases, because the complex cases should be referred to people, expert people to do it in expert centers. So the surgery can be very easy in the beginning, but if anybody not skilled enough will try to do it, unfortunately, it can end up to be an incurable fistula because complication of the first attempt. So normally, not only people who have been trained to do it should start this kind of surgery. As I say, it can be very challenging sometimes, but it's very exciting and very, very rewarding if really we allow these women, very, very, very poor and sometimes very isolated in the community, to recover their dignity.
When you are operating in a setting that is rural, what are some of the dispositions that are there in case there are complications?
Actually, we are not in a very rural area. Bodo, where we are, is 100 kilometers north of Abidjan. It's like not rural, but semi-urban. I can say even urban, semi-urban. And Bodo is a very nice hospital, which is a confessional hospital, that has almost everything required to take care of the complications. So what we do when we run any training program anywhere in the world, we don't leave patients behind with no coverage. So wherever we go, we have behind someone able to take at least of the care of the complications. We know the complications, what they are, and mostly this complication are iatrogenic. It can be due to ligation of the ureters, and when this happens in the 24 hours, we know about it. So we don't operate today and leave in the evening or leave next day. We finish operation, the team stay 2-3 days, and when we show that there's nothing wrong, now they can leave. And behind, we leave someone who can follow on them and report on the outcome after the surgery.
And before we wrap, fistula has been a problem for many, many years, even centuries. What is needed for the complete elimination of fistula in Africa?
What is needed, I think, is number one, a very efficient prevention. Because I have the prevention everywhere, but prevention to reduce maternal mortality and morbidity, number one, because if you have one mortality, you have 16 complications. And among the complications, fistula is there. So number two is to increase the surgeries, because it's very low. We do about, in sub-Saharan Africa, 2,000 to 3,000 fistula a year. Or in some countries, you have about 4,000 to 5,000 fistula patients waiting, and about 1,000 to 5,000 new cases every year. So the backlog is huge. So if we bring everybody on board, the surgeons, the urologists, the gynecologist, anybody serviceable, anybody who can be part of this and to contribute to increase the number of surgeries, will clean the backlog. And if you are efficient enough, we will have an efficient prevention to not to have new cases. So if you don't have new fistula cases and you increase the surgery, the number of surgical cases to clean the backlog, we hope that in very few years, in many countries, we'll eliminate obstructive fistula. Without, we're not forgetting to have some strategies for social reintegration for those women who have been left behind for many years. They need to get to be more educated, to be economically independent. And in this regard, I think we can definitely think about eliminating obstetric fistula in sub-Saharan Africa.
Dr. Serin Magege, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Pleasure, Lino. Thank you very much.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
The United Nations estimates that 1 in 10 girls in sub-Saharan Africa misses school during their menstruation, which can add up to as much as 20% of school year. In addition to that, the global problem of continuous rise in prices has pushed up the cost of pads in many African nations, driving more girls out of school or to unhygienic alternatives that can cause infections and infertility, says health experts. A school teacher in Ghana is helping to address girls' absenteeism in schools through the provision of reusable sanitary pads. Hamza Adams sends this report from Kumasi, Ghana.
In Afari, a remote town in Ghana's Ashanti state, a teacher has found an innovative solution to a common but rarely discussed problem. Amdia Abdulatif, a teacher at a 200-student school, noticed a problem. Her female students were regularly absent from class.
When I started teaching in this school in Afari town, I discovered that many female students do not come to school when they are menstruating due to period poverty.
Period poverty, Abdulatif says, is a term commonly associated with lack of access to sanitary pads or cleaning products. This pushes young girls to miss school during the time of the month they menstruate. Abdulatif founded Ecomi Africa, a reusable sanitary pads production facility, to offer her students products for free. She says it was important that the products are easy to clean and environmentally friendly.
Organic sustainable fabric, biochemicals.
We're using organic sustainable fabric to make these pads. We don't add any kind of chemical. The materials we're using are antimicrobials. The pads are reusable. Users can wash and dry them after use. It's affordable, healthy, and also good for the environment.
This student says the free sanitary pads have made a major impact.
We to feel comfortable in going to school, and I really like it very, very much.
Ghana isn't the only place facing this issue. A 2022 report by the UN estimated that 1 in 10 girls in sub-Saharan Africa miss school during their period or eventually drop out altogether. For Hamza Adam in Afari Town, Ghana, Salim Solomon, VOA News.
Still in Ghana, the country increased already high taxes on imported goods this year, making sanitary pads unaffordable to vulnerable women and girls who are then forced to skip school during their periods. Activists are calling for the taxes to be scrapped and are also producing locally made biodegradable pads so girls and women don't miss out on education. Senanu Todd reports from Kopong, Ghana.
Ghana's increased taxes on imported goods passed 40% this year, making sanitary pads unaffordable to many school-age girls and women. School officials say females skip classes during their periods, about 40 days per year, to avoid embarrassment when makeshift pads such as clothes leak. The loss of education can hold girls and women back economically, a cycle known as period poverty.
We have a lot of girls. Mostly our school has the girls' population more than the boys. And academically, the girls perform more than the boys. So if these menstrual issues will be picking them away from the classes, it's a major concern. So we need something to be done.
The Ghana Girl Guide, a Girl Scout partner, has petitioned the government and parliament since 2019, urging leaders to scrap taxes on sanitary pads.
As much as they are giving us excuses with the current situation in the economy and all that, I don't think that is helping us, because the ripple effect of the girl not being able to get the sanitary pad will cause more economic issues for the country if we don't address it as early as we can.
Ghana's female lawmakers say there is not enough political will to waive taxes on sanitary pads.
We must sustain the pressure. And I've discussed this with many people. You see, I'm inside and working with those outside. There are some things I can do on the inside, but I need people from outside to help me.
The Research and Counseling Foundation for African Migrants, RECFAM, has found another way to address the high cost of imported parts. The aid group makes them locally out of biodegradable banana fiber for about half the price for rural schoolgirls and women. But without sponsorship, the increased taxes this year could force them to stop producing.
The high cost of materials, especially the imported materials that we have. Like, for example, we just upgraded our facility. We got the machine, but then the materials they are almost outdated, so we can't use it anymore. And to import them with the tax increments and all of that, we cannot do anything.
Supporters say the long-term solution to keep vulnerable girls and women in school is to keep pushing Ghana's lawmakers until they agree to a tax waiver on sanitary pads. Sena Anutod for VOA News, Bon, Ghana.
Dr. Asmau Muazu Mohammed is a gynecologist in Abuja, Nigeria. She explained the importance to have more access to chemically free sanitary pads for girls.
Chemicals in whatever form are harmful to the body. So the intimate part of a woman absorbs a lot. So chemicals on skin are dangerous, but chemicals on the most absorptive part of the genital area of the woman, the vagina, will even be more harmful, causing long-term and even short-term effects on the female. So every woman should know herself. How is your flow? Is it heavy? If it's very heavy, you know there are pads that there are some that come for short ones, there are some that come longer. So okay, my period is very flowy, like I flow a lot. So you can wake up once in the night, change it. By 10 p.m., you've gone taking your nighttime shower, put on your pad. You can wake up maybe 4 or 5 hours, change it. If that's if your flow is very heavy. If it's not, fine. By the time you wake up 6, 7, take your bath and then change it again. So I would say use some that are more absorbent, then you can change them more frequently. The blood, sweat, and sebum mixing, because the part is not an exposed area of your body. So you wearing it for a very long time is giving rise to things that we are avoiding. So yes, use one that is absorbent, but you don't have to change, you don't have to use them less frequently. Just as the appropriate time, 4 to 5 hours, change your pad. 4 to 5 hours, change your pad. Blood, sweat, sebum. If they all mix together, they form a very good breeding ground for a lot of bacteria, infections. So if you wash it, you're reducing, minimizing the chance of getting any infection, whatever. Cause if, for example, you're even having a chemical laden pad, you can also reduce the risk by reducing contacts. People try to use soap and feminine wash, but water is the most important and hygienic thing you can use because the vagina itself is self-cleaning. So there's actually no point if you want to go a step further, even though we discourage it because most of these intimate wash, they have perfume. But people that want to go a step further, use intimate wash that is between the pH of 3.8, that's concentration of the intimate wash, between 3.8 to 4.5, which is like the natural pH of the vagina. But just use water, it will suffice. Let's not underestimate the power of water. Clean water is best, so that you don't introduce chemicals, more germs, or irritants to your private part, which will cause more effects in the long term, like rashes and itching and infection.
That was gynecologist Dr. Asmau Muazu Muhammad in Abuja, Nigeria. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome back to Health Chat. Kenyan Diana Ayo struggled to find a safe space in the capital for her daughter, who has a few neurological disorders, so she opened her own. Ayira's NeuroSoul Cafe not only welcomes people with cognitive conditions such as autism, but it also employs them and educates the public on neurodiversity. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Hi.
18-year-old Natasha Mwangi's efforts to find a job were futile until a month ago when she got a job here. Natasha, who was born with cerebral palsy, welcomes guests at this cafe that offers jobs to people with neurological disorders.
I'm happy and the same time excited. Thank you.
Ayira's NeuroSoul Cafe is the first of its kind in Kenya. The owner, Diana Ayo, says the name is derived from her now 5-year-old daughter, Ayira, born neurodivergent.
More and more I get parents approaching me and ask me, can my child come and work for you, even if it's for free? I will even pay you. And I told them that is not the essence. My essence is to empower them so that the society, not only Diana can absorb them, but other people can.
Guests at the cafe are also educated on neurodiversity and how to interact with neurodiverse adults and children, including through art.
You're just seeing this person for who they are beyond any extremities that they have or anything that they might about them that might be different.
Common neurological disorders include autism, dyslexia, attention deficit hyperactive disorder, ADHD, and cerebral palsy, among others. These conditions are triggered by genetic predisposition and events during pregnancy. According to the U.S.-based Center for Neurodiversity and Employment Innovation, unemployment for people with such neurological disorders runs as high as 40%. Experts say that in Kenya, lack of understanding and proper education is locking out many highly talented individuals out of the job market.
Having transitioned maybe the education system where their unique and very unique needs were not taken into consideration, then there's a very high likelihood that they will end up also not having their potentials and capacities fully identified and picked. And then this goes now to limit what we are talking about, the working space.
Neurodiversity is an understudied and underreported field, especially in Africa, according to the Neurodiversity Center. Diana hopes efforts such as this will help to educate and sensitize the public. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
To address the relatively high cost of healthcare in Africa, a Kenyan mobile application lets users pay for medical services by selling their personal data through blockchain technology. Officials say Snark Health's Hippocratic coins have attracted more than 300 doctors and 4,000 users. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Also, a patient gets...
Kenyan startup Snark Health is helping patients cut healthcare costs using an application that monetizes their data and connects them with doctors.
Also, a patient gets.
Using blockchain technology, a third of the proceeds from the sale of user data is stored as so-called Hippocratic coins, which can be converted to mobile money. Developer Edwin Lubanga says user privacy is protected.
The algorithm only picks out specific things we are looking for. Maybe a data customer wants to know the type of drugs that are being sold in northern Kenya, malaria, wants to investigate a specific type of disease, and our platform was able to capture this. Only the analytics that are the one kicked out, and this is the one that we sell it to the data customer.
I'm writing your prescription.
Lubanga says they've attracted more than 4,000 users since their launch last year and 300 Kenyan doctors like Karen Muthembwa. Muthembwa says the app, which also gives doctors a third of the sale of their data, has also boosted her earnings.
I can book my patients anytime I want to, including at night. I can say between 5 and 8 p.m. I have this time, and I get my patients booking at that time. So it's easy for me to manage.
Medical researchers say too many across Africa lack access to healthcare because of poverty and poor infrastructure. Users like Stacy Kwamboka hope the technology can put medicine within reach for more people like her.
I made an appointment that was to start 10 minutes after. It was quite fast. The doctor made a call. I was able to explain how I was feeling. The doctor was able to also make some follow-up questions and prescribed medication for me.
Snark Health is one of scores of startups featured in February at the Africa Tech Summit in Nairobi to seek funding for their innovations. Finding investors for technology startups is becoming easier, says Director Andrew Fasnage.
We had some people who pitched live on stage on Wednesday, and they had funding on Thursday. So I think African technology is super exciting. We're seeing a lot of interest from around the world.
Kenyan officials are supporting tech innovators like Snark Health with an online platform that attracts venture capitalists or VCs.
So far we have about 1,200 users on the platform. We've been able to see connections, you know, people requesting to connect with innovators, the potential investors, VCs requesting to connect with innovators, about 60 connections. So that means that we're going to start seeing deals happening very soon.
While the cost of data has slowed the rollout of mobile technology in remote parts of Africa, those costs are going down. Snark Health says turning the tables for users to benefit from sales of their data will only help to speed up and spread access to services. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.